Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter, at Andy Herman NFL. Excited to be joined by Paul Breddle. Before we get to Paul, just really quick, if you have not yet checked out the Autograph app, Paul, you've better checked out the Autograph app. Make sure to do so. It is absolutely fantastic. Everything that you need Packers related all in one spot, including the Pack-A-Day podcast and exclusive content from yours truly. Just did a video out there breaking down three Packers who need to be better moving forward. So you can check that out over on the Autograph app. Don't miss it and make sure to download that today. Paul, great to have you back. You can find, of course, Paul at Paul_Breddle. You can find him on Packers Wire and at ESPN Lacrosse, Colts Wire, and doing a million other things that are just unbelievably amazing every single time. Paul, how have you been, bud?
I'm excellent, Andy. Always happy to be back talking Packers with you, and we get to talk about a win this week.
We do. Victory Tuesdays, Wednesdays, the whole week is a victory week, and we will take it, especially when you go into a game with a backup quarterback. I want to actually start. I know you wrote a couple things this week that I want to dig into, but one of which is the defensive side of the ball in particular, because I think a lot of the focus, rightfully so, has kind of been on the offensive side of the ball, the game plan from Matt LaFleur, the rushing attack, Malik Willis coming in less than 3 weeks and leading a team to victory. We'll get to some of that, of course, but I actually kind of want to flip the script a little bit and start on the defensive side of the ball, because we know this team last year and under Joe Barry, turnovers were not something that they were able to get with any sort of consistency. Now we are 2 weeks in and we are seeing a defense that, yes, they maybe get a couple turnovers here and there, the fumble in week one, and it's a Hail Mary interception in week two. It's not like these are the most impressive turnovers in the world, but you're also seeing Xavier McKinney with a couple picks. You see Eric Wilson come up with one with this week. You saw Eric Wilson force a fumble that could have been a turnover. You saw Quay Walker should have had a pick. Keyshawn should have had a pick six last week. Like, you're seeing more and more of this defense that is having eyes on the football and making these sort of plays.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the more crazier stats 2 weeks in is the five interceptions the Packers have right now. It was only two shy of last year's total of seven, which, believe it or not, was the second fewest in football. So absolutely an area where the Packers had to improve this season. And turnovers are an extremely volatile stat from season to season, even week to week. They're tough to predict. But what you can do is put yourself in a situation where you're at least increasing your odds of being in the right spot to have the opportunity and make plays on the ball. And I think that's what we're seeing early on with this Jeff Hafley defense. Matt LaFleur talked about on Monday, he talked about it during the offseason as well, that one of the schematic changes for the Packers under Hafley is that vision-based approach where it's all eyes on the quarterback rather than the more matchy defensive scheme that they had under Joe Barry, where you're more worried about kind of your part of the field, your quadrant, who's coming in it, who's coming out of it. So all eyes are on the quarterback. I think another key factor is that fast physical play style that we've heard so much about this offseason from Jeff Hafley and wanting his players to have that attacking mentality. A lot of that starts with the game plan, the teaching component of it from Hafley's perspective. He had this quote during the offseason that I love, where it was something to the effect of, I can put together the greatest game plan ever on paper, but if it can't be executed on, who cares? It doesn't matter at that point. So the teaching component of it, understanding his players, what they do well, where they struggle, what does the opponent do well, what do we want to take away, and marrying all that together in a digestible game plan. I don't want to use the term simple because there's definitely nuance to it. There's rotations, there's different looks, there's all that stuff, but the digestible game plan so guys can just go out there, see what's unfolding, and boom, just react. So I think that's a component of it. And then Xavier McKinney, obviously, he has two of the interceptions, but just his presence on the back end, his ability to, I say teleport, because sometimes the way he just moves around the field from one spot to the other, it's so quick, and boom, he's just there. And he's a force multiplier. He makes the players around him better.
Yeah, he very much is. And I think, you, to your point, Xavier McKinney's a huge pickup. And from a Jeff Hafley standpoint, you also get what you emphasize, right? Mm-hmm. Like, And he came in and said, we're going to lead the league in turnovers. We're going to be a team that generates a ton of turnovers. And it's one thing to say it. It sounds great. It's a great soundbite in a press conference. And it's another to back it up. And I think what's really impressive to me is they've had a very specific game plan of, hey, we're not going to cause a bunch of chaos and get after the quarterback and bring a bunch of pressure. They did it in times. And in fact, mm-hmm. the David McKinney pick is one where Quay Walker's yep. coming on a blitz and gets into the backfield. So I think the fact that hopefully once you actually cause even more chaos in the backfield, when you're going more against the Will Levis's coming up, the Sam Darnold's coming up, the Matthew Stafford the week after that, like you've got some quarterbacks coming up that aren't your super mobile freak quarterbacks that can get out and you know get outside and throw on the run quite as much and beat you with their legs as often. So you're going to be able to, I think, get after the quarterback more, which is usually when those mistakes tend to happen more. So I'm extremely hopeful that, you know, once Rashawn Gary and Devontae Wyatt and this defensive front gets even more going and get their, you know, the ability to kind of pin their ears back a little bit and get after the quarterback, I think there's a chance where we could even see more opportunities for turnovers. I know it's, I mean, realistically, what they generated these past 2 weeks in terms of opportunities mm-hmm. for turnovers, you will take that every single week, but man, add pressure into that equation. And I think you could be really cooking.
Yeah. And we could even look at the opportunities that were missed. There were two dropped interceptions against the Eagles, Quay yep. had the drop at the end of the game. So again, we talked a lot about this offseason, but what are the schematic changes that we're going to see under Jeff Hafley? And not to downplay that, that's certainly part of this equation. Like I said, Matt LaFleur talked about that vision-based approach. But honestly, I think a lot of this, again, when you go to turnovers, it's play style. Are you positioned where you're supposed to be? Are you breaking on the ball? Are you reading things correctly? And I think that's a big, big factor in what we've seen so far.
Yeah, and I mean, to Jeff Hafley's credit, players have been, I mean, the forced fumble by Eric is a great play by Eric. Mm-hmm. The fumble that you get on the bad snap in week one is just a fortunate play that you're able to get, you know, going in your favor. But Jair is in the position to make a pick last week, and he does. And he makes a really good play on that one. But then he's on, in a position to potentially get another pick on a play. Keyshawn's in a position mm-hmm. where he can get a pick. Wilson's in a position where he can get a pick this week. McKinney's in a position, and he made a great play in his too. But like both of those are in positions where he can go and get picks and, again, has vision on the football. So, again, yes, you have to have the players. You have to have the scheme. It all has to work hand in hand. But you can very much tell that this new approach is working and it's going to pay dividends. It's going to have more eyes in the football and it's just going to allow for opportunities. And as we saw these past 2 weeks, as we both said, it's not that all of those are going to turn into turnovers. We've seen some drops. We've seen some, but that is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Not all of these players are wide receivers for a reason, but if you can get the players and opportunities to be in a position and actually make those plays, it's going to happen, I think, you know, more often than not.
Yep. Well said.
Let's go back to the offensive side of the ball a little bit, because I know you also wrote about Malik Willis and specifically having a lot on his plate. And I think it is something that is so worth talking about, because this is not your normal backup quarterback situation. I mean, it would have been a lot to put on Sean Clifford's plate, if we're being real, like, and he's in year two in the offense, and it still would have been a tall task to get him ready to go and make sure that he knows everything for a specific game plan. And this is not somebody that has been with the team for a year plus. This is a less than 3 week addition to the team. Even go back to Jordan Love in year two when he made that first start against KC. Go to Jordan Love last year at times early in the year where this offense didn't necessarily have quite an identity yet and you were still trying to figure things out. There were some very disjointed offensive game plans, yet the Packers were A, able to put one together, and B, Malik Willis was able to handle that workload and put together a winning performance.
Yeah, in terms of what the Packers needed from him, it was nearly a flawless performance on Malik Willis's part. And I think it can be easy to look at the box score and see 53 runs, I believe it was. But this wasn't just turning around and handing the ball off. I mean, the Packers threw a ton at the Colts from a personnel standpoint, from a scheme standpoint, outside zone, gap scheme. They dialed up so much, and a number of those plays were brand new to the offense in this last week in terms of what they implemented compared to what they put on tape previously. And while that throws a lot at the Colts, that also puts a lot on the plate of Malik Willis, who has to relay those long play calls that Matt LaFleur talked about, who has to understand how that all is supposed to unfold within the context of what is the Matt LaFleur offense that he's only been a part of for not even 3 weeks. So just a tremendous job of commanding, being in charge, being the leader of that unit to, again, put together what was what felt like a nearly flawless performance. And then when he did have to throw the ball, 12 of 14, and two of those passes, the downfield one to Dobbs, the touchdown pass to Wicks, a really tight window throw with Kenny Moore closing in on it. I mean, those are really good throws that he made on top of just, again, the command, the presence he brought to the huddle. So you see 53 runs, you see the, you know, I know the word that could be used is conservative, yeah. But Willis had this quote post game that I loved, where it was something to the effect of, you know, if this is what the game plan dictates, and running the ball did, the Colts struggled to stop it against the Houston Texans. So the fact that the Packers came out that way, I don't think it caught anyone off guard. But if that's what the game plan dictates, if the game plan's working, Malik Willis goes, why would you stop just to prove someone else wrong? And
right.
That's what this was. Here's what we put in, because that's what the defense shows we can take advantage of. It's working, so that's what we're going to continue to do.
One of the things that I look at from a quarterback, and I don't care if it is, you know, Mitch Trubisky in the dark ages of the Chicago Bears. And I think when you get to a situation from an efficiency standpoint, if you can go out and execute the game plan and be efficient, and whether that is throwing 12 passes or whether it's throwing 55 of them, there's obviously going to be different asks of different quarterbacks. But if you can go out and have an efficient day, that is a successful day at the quarterback position. And for what Malik Willis was asked to do in this game, he was as efficient as you could almost possibly be given that scenario. I maybe two plays here or there. I think the one play to Dontavian Wicks on the wheel route, maybe a hair late on that throw. Even still, he put it right on Dontavian Wicks. Wicks had his hands on it, and I don't necessarily count that as a drop because that's a bang-bang, and Wicks got drilled right as it's there. So it's probably still a little bit late, but he still put it right on Dontavian Wicks. And then I thought there was one play where he handed it where he probably should have kept it on a quarterback keeper. And I think he had a little bit of an option there. And I thought he could, we are talking about some massive nits to pick in a game mm-hmm. that he was almost flawless at. And you know, when you go out and have that performance, we have seen some backup quarterback performances before, Paul, where you have no idea what you're going to get. You can't execute the offense. We are seeing starting quarterback performances throughout the league where they are not asked to do a ton and they just cannot get the job done and be efficient in any capacity. So 3 weeks in to run this offense with all the crazy motions and orbits and everything that they put in, it's as impressive as a game as you can get for somebody who threw 12 passes. I cannot believe we're already 2 weeks into the season, and after a bunch of crazy results from week two, including a big win from Green Bay, I'm already looking ahead to week three. And in week three, it is officially time to do some winning with Prize Picks. Right now, one Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right, only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. Trust me, you are not going to want to miss out on this opportunity. What I love about Prize Picks is that you can win 100 times your money with as little as 4 correct picks. And Prize Picks is the only real money daily fantasy platform with an injury insurance policy so that your lineups stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. If your player leaves in the first half and doesn't return, your picks are still live. So obviously, I'll be going with Caleb Williams again, but I'm going with Christian Watson this week as well, who I anticipate will be much more involved in week three. Whoever you choose, the best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks for a deposit match up to $100. What are you waiting for? Get in the game with Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are 2 tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, 2 tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the first things Matt LaFleur said to us after the game was, I don't even know if I can describe to you guys how impressive that was. Again, all the additional meeting time that went in through the week, the film study, all the additional practice reps after the scheduled practice was over with Willis, a ton went into him being able to go out there and operate that offense at a high level. And as the week was unfolding leading up to the matchup, you know, LaFleur, from the sounds of it, they kind of went into the start of the week of like, all right, here's what we're looking at from a game plan perspective, go out on the practice field. And a key part of getting to where they were on Sunday was a really open and honest dialogue between Willis and LaFleur, where Willis, you know, if something wasn't clicking for him or just didn't fully grasp it within the context of the Matt LaFleur offense, to let LaFleur know so that they could take it out and put something else in. Or so it was a call sheet that Willis was completely comfortable with and executing. And that approach, I don't think can be overlooked either in terms of what we saw on the field, because a big part of that, again, was just that collaboration piece between LaFleur and Willis to get to what we saw on Sunday.
Yeah, it really was. It was a really cool performance from him. I want to stick on the offensive side of the ball, and specifically with an offensive lineman in Rashid Walker. Ken Ingles posted this, and I guess I didn't really recognize it at first glance, but I think it's a noteworthy statistic nonetheless. Rashid Walker leads the league in offensive lineman penalties so far with 4 of them, 3 holding penalties and then a false start penalty as well. The holding penalty he had that brought back the Josh Jacobs touchdown this past week was definitely a big one, and a play where I don't think he actually needed to hold on the play. I think Jacobs was going to get to his spot anyway. I don't think it's been like this egregiously bad start for Rashid. I don't think it's been quite to the level that he set for himself at the end of last year. I think he needs to clean up a little bit of the penalties. I thought this week was more of like a neutral game from Rashid, nothing too egregious again, but I do think there is a better player there, somebody that I thought had a fantastic training camp and would just like to maybe see him settle into that and kind of own that left tackle position, maybe just a little bit more.
Yeah, and like you said, it definitely was improved play this week, and the Packers, their offensive line has had a tough start to the year in terms of who their opponent is, the Eagles defensive front, the Colts defensive front, and looking back at last year, and again, that's someone who's coming in 2023 with really no NFL experience versus now having a full season, but it took Rashid a little while to get going during that early portion of the year last year. So hopefully just some rush that's being shaken off as he gets into the early going here. But the obviously the Packers need him to be that guy at the left tackle, because they don't necessarily have the luxury this year of doing a rotation like they did a year ago. They don't have a Yash Nyman who they can bring off the bench, because it's Kadeem Telfert and Andre Dillard who are apparently taking turns right now being the inactives. Jordan Morgan is rotating or with Sean Ryan at the right guard position. So Packers don't have that luxury this season to try to really ramp up the competition at that left tackle spot. So obviously important that Walker continues to progress like we saw from week 1 to week 2.
Yeah, I think he will too. I think he's a good enough left tackle to be a good, solid, sound left tackle in this league, and somebody that we're not talking about as having these penalties or even a negative performance here or there. I think he'll bounce back. I think this is a really good matchup against the Titans this week. The Titans don't have great edge players, so I expect Rashid to sort of just kind of get back to what we expect and what we saw from him at the end of last year. I want to jump back to the defensive side of the ball because I'm very bad at my job and didn't prepare this correctly to do defense and offense all in one sort of situation. But let's go to the defensive line. We talked about it a little bit. I know you, I think, wrote about it as well with the discipline of the defensive line. And I know some people want to see a little bit more from, Rashawn Gary and Kenny Clark and Preston Smith and all these guys, LVN, and seeing more sacks and pressures. It's all we heard about all offseason is how this defense is aggressive and getting after the quarterback. And then we saw 2 very disciplined approaches from that defensive line. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and again, it's what the matchup dictated. So I think, glass half full here, Jeff Hafley's designing things based on, all right, what's the opponent doing? What do we have to do week to week to alter some things to make sure that we're defending this specific opponent to our best ability? And we got 2 mobile quarterbacks. The Packers, they talked about it. Matt LaFleur talked about it. Took a more disciplined approach in terms of rushing the quarterback, making sure they're keeping Jalen Hurts, Anthony Richardson in the pocket. And one of the comments LaFleur made post game was how proud he was of the defensive front for their ability to be disciplined. And in the locker room afterwards, Rashawn Gary talked about that. That gets challenging at times because, again, sometimes you just want to let it rip. It's a third down. You just want to go get the quarterback. But in the grand scheme of the game plan, you got to stick to what your specific responsibility is. And for the most part in both games, in terms of containing Hurts and Richardson, they did a good job at that. So that's really what the basis of all this was. And going against Will Levis next week, the other quarterbacks upcoming, a Titans offensive line that's really struggled. I think we're going to see more of that get off the ball, go get the quarterback type of approach. But these opponents, this is what that game plan called for. And again, in the scope of, all right, what's being asked of these guys? What do they need to do? They went out and did their jobs in that regard.
Yeah, 17 carries for 70 yards, which is pretty impressive for the two quarterbacks combined so far. 4.1 yard average. If I would have told Jeff Hafley, hey, you can hold Richardson and Hurts to 70 yards total rushing on 17 attempts, I think they would have signed up for that 1,000,000%. And again, it takes a level of discipline and it just doing your 111th to get that done because, man, what do these defensive ends get paid for when their contracts come up? It is sacks, it is pressure. So just holding the point of attack along the defensive end and defensive tackle positions and making sure that there's no release points. But we've also seen in the past, go back to the Giants game last year with Tommy Cutlets, where there would be a lack of gap integrity and one guy would get upfield too far and he would step up and roll to his right and just take off running. Like you have plays like that, especially to Hurts and Richardson, and it is going to burn you over and over and over again. And we have seen Packers teams struggle with mobile quarterbacks in the past and to play two of the better ones in all football. I know they haven't seen Lamar yet, but the two of the better ones still in all football and Richardson and Hurts and contain them the way that they did. To me, that is a win up front. And I'm not worried yet about where the pass rush is because that's not been what they've been asked to do.
Yeah. And it only takes one player to, go off script and try to get after the quarterback for a massive running lane to open up. And like what we talked about last week, the defensive approach was pretty similar in terms of overall against that Colts team, because the Packers did a heck of a job at eliminating the big downfield opportunities. We saw in week one, three plays for the Colts of 50 plus yards. Two of them led to touchdowns. One eventually led to a touchdown, but there wasn't much going for that Colts passing game downfield. And again, like we talked about, it forced Anthony Richardson, that offense, to say, all right, can you put together those 10, 12 play scoring drives and put together sustainable drives? So overall, just a really sound performance from the Packers defense, a disciplined performance, knowing what they needed to do in that specific game. And for the most part, being able to execute on it.
I want to talk about linebacker. I think the Quay Walker discussion's basically been beaten to death already, so I don't know that we need to jump too far into it. Quay hasn't played well enough through the first 2 weeks. I think the Packers know it. I think he knows it. And now it's just going to be, can he bounce back, play better? It's week three in a new system. I know it's year three and there's expectations there, so he needs to play better. But I want to more ask about Edgerrin Cooper. We found out last week that the expectation and the goal for the coaching staff was to play Edgerrin Cooper more. And then he played less. He played, seven total snaps in this one. Nothing super egregious on tape. There was one time he lost the edge a little bit. It was a little bit of an unlucky play where he set the edge, and then it looked like Jonathan Taylor was going to cut back inside, so he kind of went inside, and then Jonathan Taylor got around the edge on him. So a little bit of a rookie mistake there, but it didn't seem to be anything egregious, but they're still trying to figure out ways to kind of get him on the field. It didn't really happen this past week.
Yeah, you see the speed, you see the playmaking potential that he brings, and you think, man, how do we get this guy on the field more just to have that presence? But as I'm looking through this linebacker position, and again, it's one that collectively has to perform better, I'm still struggling to see where a significant increase in workload comes for Edgerrin Cooper, because Quay Walker is not coming off the field. He's going to be on the field. So then you look at, all right, they're in nickel for 70-80% of their snaps. Well, that leaves Isaiah McDuffie. Isaiah McDuffie's strength is as a run defender.
Yeah.
That's why in those nickel situations, he's out there to at least provide that presence for them. And Edgerrin Cooper, again, as a young player who missed a lot of training camp, there's an obvious learning curve that he's still working through. You mentioned the misplay against the Colts on that Jonathan Taylor run the week prior. There was a misalignment that LaFleur was talking about that led to a Saquon Barkley. I think it was a touchdown. So again, that's a part of his game where I think there's going to be a bigger learning curve for him than the operate in space coverage ability aspect, where his just natural athleticism and skill set can really take over. So where's he going to come into play? And then you look at that third linebacker spot when they do go into base, and man, tough to take Eric Wilson off the field right now, if you ask me, right? I mean, we just talked about the playmaking potential of Edgerrin Cooper. Well, Wilson's recognizing his with some massive plays from Sunday's game. So again, where do those additional snaps come from in terms of seeing a significant increase in the workload? I'm not exactly sure at this time. You know, if there's an obvious passing situation, it's third and six plus, five plus, whatever it is, and you want to put Cooper out there next to Quay Walker, get McDuffie off the field, I think there's added opportunities in that regard. But seeing his snap count go from 10 to 30, I'm not sure where that works in at this point in the season. As things progress, he gets more opportunities. He shows a more well-rounded skill set, more comfortability within the defense as he gets more reps. Obviously, this conversation can change a month from now, 2 months from now. But right now, it feels like, all right, there's 8 snaps here, 10 snaps here, 12 snaps, whatever it ends up being, that's kind of what his workload's going to be.
I think it's a difficult situation because I think everyone looks at linebacker, maybe outside of, you know, what you are getting from Eric Wilson so far in a very limited amount of playing time, and say that position needs to be better. And then it's not like one of these positions where the cupboard's completely empty and you're just like, man, I don't even know what they possibly do. It's like they just spent a second and third round pick on Edgerrin Cooper and Tyron Hopper. It's like, you know, maybe you just try that out. But I think the counterbalance, the counterpoint to that would be, we saw Quay have to go in as a rookie and sort of immediately play and kind of live through some of those mistakes. And whether that set him back from day one, just because maybe he wasn't ready and got into some bad habits early, no idea, but it could have been something like that. And I think maintaining patience right now with Edgerrin Cooper and Tyron Hopper at those positions and letting them come along at their own pace, not trying to put too much on their plate. And the first week was 10, 11 snaps. Last week was 7 snaps. Maybe this upcoming week is 15, 20 snaps. And maybe, again, to your point, maybe he settles into that and looks good. And then maybe he gets to 20 to 25. They're doing it with Jordan Morgan at right guard. They're doing it with Evan Williams at safety. They are doing it with Edgerrin Cooper at linebacker. Maybe Tyron Hopper gets in that discussion as well at some point, but they are bringing these players along at their own pace, at the pace that they feel is necessary. And Javon Bullard, when he was ready to go, they felt he's the starter. There wasn't even really a conversation by the end of camp. He was going to be the guy. And maybe that will come for Morgan and Cooper and some of these other rookies. But I don't hate the fact right now that they are bringing them along at their own pace. And when it's time to go in a different direction, whether that is via Quay, whether that's via McDuffie, whether that's via Wilson, then so be it. But for now, let it play out on its own accord. And I'm happy to see that they're not trying to push it too far too fast. All right, guys, it's the best time of year. Football is back. We're talking NFL Sundays, college football Saturdays, and that glorious grind of fantasy football lineups. But listen, while you're over here making sure your fantasy team is dialed in, don't let your personal grooming become the guy that gets left on the bench. Let's be honest, nobody wants to fumble their grooming routine. But that's where Manscaped's Performance Package 5.0 Ultra comes in, acting as your all-in-one grooming playbook. From keeping things sharp below with the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra to taking care of those rogue nose and ear hairs with the Weed Whacker 2.0, this is the lineup that'll keep you looking and feeling like a champ on and off the field. So join the over 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get ready for kickoff by heading over to manscaped.com. Use the code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. Trust me, you'll be drafting the real MVP of grooming this season. If you haven't tried the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra Groin and Body Hair Trimmer, this is the franchise player of your grooming roster. With precise trimming capabilities, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is built for performance. It's reliable, efficient, and gets the job done without fumbling. So what are you waiting for? Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. Stay on top of your grooming game and be ready for anything this season throws your way.
Yeah, everything you just described, like, that's what the Packers do. This isn't just this year's draft class. You can go back to 2018, Goody's first year, and they drafted Jair Alexander. There have been very, very few rookies who come in and from the first day of training camp, you go, oh yeah, he's one of the starters. Like, maybe they take on a starting role by week 2 or 3 if they're an early round pick. But again, the Packers put on these guys' plates what they think that they can handle. And based on what Cooper has shown them in practice behind the scenes, they feel that right now this is the workload for them.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on, and we'll see. I do expect more snaps for Cooper going forward, but let him take it at its own pace and not, again, put too much on his plate to begin with. All right, I want to move over to special teams. Brayden Narveson in particular, two missed field goals, both around 45 yarders that he missed. Overall, I think he's 6 of 8 so far, has made his extra points. A little bit up and down. He knows he needs to make those field goals. We found out yesterday, though, that the Packers, at least from Matt LaFleur's standpoint, even if he did caveat it with that's a Goody question, it sounded like he wants to be patient with Narveson.
Yeah, and LaFleur said it as well. Like, they understood that there was going to be ups and downs, as should be expected when, hey, you're relying on a rookie kicker, let alone one who wasn't with you for training camp, who got here a week before you traveled to Brazil, where he's making his first regular season field goal attempts. And it's obviously not to the extent of like Malik Willis at quarterback, but there's a transition period for him. There's the getting familiar with the long snapper, the holder. There's different elements. There's change. And again, the rookie kicker aspect of it, there's the expected ups and downs that are coming. But I think something that necessarily can't be overlooked is that Narveson's 8 field goal attempts so far are tied for the most in football. And I think to a degree, not saying it's a huge degree, but I think to a degree that does speak to some of the confidence that the Packers have in him and putting him out there in those situations. And I think a lot of that confidence that the Packers have for him, at the end of the day, he's got to make the kicks. That's the name of the game. That's the job for him. The misses at the kicker position are always going to be magnified from the outside looking in. But I think where the Packers internally are gaining their confidence is in the mental makeup. We hear Rich Bisaccia use that a lot when describing the kicker position. They interviewed Narveson during the pre-draft process, really liked his self-confidence, how he carried himself, his ability to move on from a miss or a make and just be focused on, all right, what's the next opportunity that's coming? So there's a lot of those background aspects of it in the interactions that they have, how they see Narveson's approach, how they see him operate on a day-to-day basis between kicks, how he bounces back from misses, that I think is all playing into the confidence that, all right, this, he can be our guy moving forward. Because can tell you from talking to him, Narveson isn't lacking any sort of confidence in himself. No. He has said, I belong in the NFL. Now it's up to him to go out there on a daily basis and prove that. But he certainly believes that he belongs here, and you want that from your kicker. You want him to have that confidence. And if the first kick is missed, that, all right, whatever, I'll go out and make the next one. Like, you need to have that. You need to have that self-confidence, that swagger to a degree. And the few interactions that we've had with Narveson, he certainly seems to have that. And I think, again, all of that plays into the confidence that the Packers have. And the first impression that he made on this team, I know Matt Schneidman tweeted it out, that Jair Alexander said to LaFleur, like, oh, look at this guy. Jordan Love had talked about him on his first day. Like, that stuff matters. And if the team is feeling good about him, feeling confident in him, again, that's going to, you hope, translate onto what you see from the football field.
And I kind of feel the same way. I mean, what Green Bay went through, like 6 kickers, including Narveson, through the start of the offseason up until now.
I think so.
And yeah, you said 6, right?
I think so.
Yeah. And I never felt anywhere near the remote level of confidence that I do with Brayden Narveson. And again, it's not, that doesn't mean necessarily anything. He still, again, to your point, has to go out and make kicks, but it absolutely feels a lot different when he is out there. And just the way that he strikes the ball, it pops off of his foot. It sounds good. It looks good. And again, ultimately those two posts are there for a reason. You got to get it in the middle of them. But I'm more on board with saying, I was ready to look for a different answer to Anders. I didn't think Greg Joseph was the answer, nor any of the other random guys that they brought in. Narveson to me is like, let's go through this. There's been nothing egregious so far. Like, if all of a sudden we, see in Tennessee this week, he has a, 0-for-4 game or a 1-for-5 game or something like that. Okay. We have to have a much different discussion, but if he has another 3-for-4 day, I'm still much more of like, let's continue. Let's keep it going. And let's see if he can kind of get this going in the right direction and gain a little bit more consistency.
It's funny you mentioned that. And again, I'm sure part of it is just the small sample size of 2 games versus a full season. But even after the misses, there isn't this like gut-wrenching feeling that I'm having of, oh man, yeah, what are they going to do at kicker? Again, it's just, and I think what I was trying to describe earlier, I think that's part of just the vibe he gives off, like, oh, he's not worried. I'm not going to be worried. He knows he'll figure it out. He knows he belongs here. He'll get things on track. And I think, again, going back to the confidence, what do the Packers see? I definitely think that's part of that what LaFleur had mentioned yesterday.
Yeah, I think so too. And hopefully he just finds that level of consistency, because Green Bay could certainly use it at that position. All right, a couple of quick ones before we get out of here. First of all, I want to know maybe the biggest or most surprising overachiever that you've seen so far for this team. It's 2 weeks, small sample size, but biggest overachiever or surprising overachiever, and biggest or most surprising underachiever on this team through 2 weeks so far.
So overachiever, going low hanging fruit here, Malik Willis, just for all of the things we mentioned. Before we hopped on here, I was scrolling through the Packers roster just to see if anyone came to mind. And I think for the most part, at least from my perspective, there's a lot of kind of status quo. It's kind of what you expect so far. But just one other thing that I'll add about Willis, in addition to what we talked about earlier, he is so even keeled. Like, he gives Jordan Love a run for his money in the even keel department. I mean, doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. He is focused on the moment. What is happening right now? And that isn't to say, you know, the first time we got to interact with him in the locker room when he just first arrived in Green Bay, you know, he mentioned he knows what the narrative is about him right now, given how his career has gone. He says, and he understands that obviously he wants to go out there and change that. He wants to prove that what he showed in Tennessee, that's not who he is as a quarterback. But with that approach is, there's nothing I can do about what happened. There's nothing I can do about the future. I can only control what is happening today. What can I do in this moment, in this meeting, during this practice rep, to help me get on the right path to turn around the career that he's had up to this point? And when you look at the situation that he was just thrown into, traded to Green Bay, he got 3 weeks, he got to go out and get ready to play on Sunday. I mean, that just seems like the perfect demeanor to have as a person, in terms of, like, it doesn't seem like that would overwhelm him. As much as was thrown on his plate, as much additional work as he had to put in, everything that he had to navigate this past week, he just seems like someone who just takes it, you know, as a grain of salt. That's just what this job is. This is what I got to do to be ready. So I'm just going to go out and do it. So again, I feel like that's one of those little peek behind the curtains that we've gotten to see from him in the few interactions that we've had. And I definitely think that was a factor in just his ability to handle the moment, not look like the pressure is getting to him whatsoever, and just go out and have the performance that he did.
And then what about your underachiever?
Underachiever, I think right now I'm going to go with Luke Musgrave. And I'm not surprised in the sense that Tucker Kraft has become tight end one. I know we talked about it during the sidelines as training camp was happening. I mean, he just brings such a well-rounded skill set to the position. Where I am surprised is the discrepancy, you know, especially in that first game where it was 17 snaps that Musgrave had in that game. So I thought that there would be more of a role for him. And again, especially this last week, you knew they weren't going to go a ton of two tight end looks, wanting to spread the Colts out and run against them in that fashion. But I did think there'd be more opportunities for him. And hindsight being 2020, this is coming off of a training camp where there just weren't a lot of days or plays where he had some big performances that stood out. Whereas Tucker Kraft comes back from the pec injury, and those final 2 weeks, he just seems like he's making at least a play or two every day in practice. So again, hindsight's always 2020 as we reflect on those things. But again, I thought there'd be more of a role for Musgrave at this point.
I thought there was a interview with Steno once, or a press conference with Steno too, where he said that Musgrave had a very quiet training camp or a slow start to camp or something to that effect too. I was like, huh, it's a little bit interesting. But yeah, it's definitely been a little bit of a surprising one. Just again, like you mentioned, the discrepancy between the two. Like, really quickly for me, my overachiever, and this might sound aggressive because we know he's a really good player, I just love the way that Elgton Jenkins is playing so far. Like, I think he's playing the best football of his career. And it's sometimes rare that you get a player, and again, it's only 2 weeks, we'll see what he does the rest of the year, but like, it's rare that you get a player who I think has been good his entire career, and like, all of a sudden in year, I don't know, what is it, 6-7 for Elgton at this point, like all of a sudden even looks better. And I think that to me is when what's surprising, but he's been one of my favorite players to watch so far on film. So I'm going to go, just as a slight surprise, Elgton Jenkins as the overachiever, and then Kenny as an underachiever. We know a little bit recently that Kenny gets off to a little bit more of a slow start to the season and then kind of ramps up as the season goes along, but this run defense needs to be better. And I think that starts with Kenny. I think some of the double teams he hasn't held up against quite as well as he has in the past hasn't made quite as much of an impact. And again, I'm not even talking the pass rush stuff, because we kind of went through the job description that they've had, but even as a run defender, just haven't seen the same Kenny that we're used to so far.
Yeah.
All right, cool. And then last but not least, Packers Titans, just quick thoughts. Anything that you're sort of looking for? Does Jordan play? I'll let you go in any direction that you want.
I think the big thing for me is the pass rush that we talked about. I think there's just going to be the opportunity for them to, what we saw this summer, pin their ears back, go and get after the quarterback. And saw the stat floating around Twitter. I think it was something like the Titans have a pressure rate of around 50% that their offensive line has surrendered, a super high amount. So I think this is going to be an opportunity for the Packers defensive front to really go get after the quarterback. So I'm just excited to see them in that capacity go do so. Because really the one glimpse that we got was during the joint practice against the Ravens, because that's obviously when the starters were on the field. Unlike in the preseason, they're going up against a different opponent. And I thought in that environment that pass rush had a pretty good performance. So now I'm excited to see if they can carry that over the regular season.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they will. I think they're going to be champing at the bit to really, you know, get after the quarterback. And I think, you know, almost to an extent, it's like you have starved these players from the opportunity to chase a quarterback for 2 weeks. And I think you're just going to release the hounds and be like, all right, fresh meat, Will Levis is out there. Go get after him, guys. And he's going to probably vomit up something. And no pun intended with Josh Myers and Elton Jenkins this week. But I think I'm very much looking forward to that. And I think the defensive front's going to respond in a big, big way. Paul, fantastic stuff as always. Where can we find all of your tremendous work?
I appreciate it, Andy. Follow me on Twitter at @Paul_Bredel. Find all my work over at ESPNLacrosse.com. If you're a Wisconsin sports fan, download 105.5 ESPN Lacrosse app, Packers, Brewers, Bucks, Badgers, sports radio, all day long, news, all the good stuff.
Good stuff always with John Papadopoulos as well. I'll be talking to him later today as we're recording this. But make sure to check out Paul again at @Paul_Bredel. You can find me at @AndyHermanNFL. You can follow the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Paul and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.